This is Betty Desire, and you're listening to the audio version of the Betty Pages, Cascadia's most inclusive alternative lifestyle tabloid. I'll be reading for you today the October edition, 2019, the Halloween edition. Happy haunting, hamsters. Article 1, Making Drag Work for Everyone, by Heather Bates. New regular inclusive drag show hits the Bellingham scene. Quote, no matter who you are, we will fight for your freedom to be yourself and your right to be celebrated as a human being, birth a baby, work host, and cast director. Work is a non-competition. It breaks the conventions of RuPaul drags them through the grass and wipes them clean to reveal a sparkling new world of glamorous togetherness. In the words of its creators, it is a celebration of queer art and queer culture in every form. A celebration that fired its engine so brightly that it envelopes and lifts up new artists along its path. Work opened its doors and boarded the new, the different, and the underrepresented, and touches down every third Thursday from now on at the Firefly Lounge in Bellingham. Work is a show, but it's also a party and open arms, an invitation waiting to be taken. Work is the hand extended waiting to reach out. Work is different. It does not take away from the staple, groundbreaking, and necessary drag shows Bellingham already enjoys, but rather it lends itself as a complement, like a fine wine waiting to be tasted that brings out the long-lost flavors of a favorite traditional dish. Work is the brainchild of Dion Fountain as producer and manager, and Bertha Baby, the host and cast director. Work also incorporates two regular cast members, Jack Goff and Glamazon Prime, whose collaborative efforts form the framework of the show. Each episode of the show includes two guest performers, keeping the lineup fresh and interesting. Work's design allows for fun, regular changes. The show's originators, Bertha, Jack, Glamazon, and Dion, find this in themes. Each show has a theme and orbits around that theme. Bertha keeps the audience enthralled with stand-up comedy and audience interaction. The cast and guest artists dazzle with three different performances in each show, with at least one performance centered around that month's theme. This is a big show for a regularly occurring event. There are three sets in each show, giving each performer three different chances to shine. With the host also performing, this means 15 separate performances in each Work incarnation. Despite its grand format, Work has one very simple goal. That goal is to be Bellingham's most inclusive and welcoming drag show. Work is not trying to disrupt. Work is trying to build up, says Dion Fountain. Work has a place for everyone. As a queer person of color who was raised religious, Work has a home for me, said Dion. Work has a home for you. It doesn't matter if you feel ostracized. Your home, he says. Bertha Baby grew up in the Seattle area as a child actor on stage and in film, even being featured in a Microsoft commercial. As a lifelong performer and Work host, Bertha holds this idea close to her heart as well. As queer people, we are used to constant criticism and fear that people will see us as different, bad, or wrong. We're currently living in a time when the largest queer representation in the media is a competition show where people are receiving negative critiques on a regular basis. I think it's hard not to expect that, because we're being handed this format of present your art and have your art critiqued. Work is not going to follow the format of tearing each other down in the queer community. We are only here to lift up and celebrate the queer community in all of its beauty. No matter who you are, we will fight for your freedom to be yourself and your right to be celebrated as a human being, says Bertha. Dion came to the show via his work with PFLAG, having been with the organization for over 13 years. I've been on the board of the Seattle, Renton, and Bellingham PFLAG chapters, but I felt like it wasn't enough. When I went to my first drag show, I had found that the primary thing that a drag queen does is help fundraise, while also in energizing the community and acting as ambassadors. And I really wanted to put my own spin on that. Bertha found drag after struggling to find an outlet. As a queer person, I didn't really know where in the world I could go, and one day I went to a drag show. I had thought about the ideas of drag. I had done some makeup in my bedroom for fun, just to see what would happen. After attending a drag show out of curiosity and at first feeling intimidated, Bertha found her footing. Returning and asking to participate, eventually someone gave the green light and a star was born. Bertha, clearly a natural host, explained the meaning of the show when she said, "I want to make sure that queer people feel support in the community and that they feel celebrated, whether they are a performer, whether they are an audience member, or whether they are a community member just trying to understand who are they are going to be, a celebration of queer people." The inaugural work show fired its rockets on Thursday, September 26th, with guests Chris Gender and Mia Moore sharing their art with the crowd. Work has its roots firmly planted and only has room to grow, offering additional stage time to the Pacific Northwest's bustling community of drag artists. Excited for queer people and their allies to have an additional outlet, Dion adds, "Rumors has continuously and tirelessly provided for us, and I am so incredibly thankful for them." You can catch the next work show at the Firefly Lounge, 1015 North State Street in Bellingham, on Thursday, October 17th at 9 p.m. Betty's Corner, October 2019, by Betty Desire. October. Fall has gripped the city with its damp gray claws. No more pretending that a blue sunny sky will bring with it 80 degree warmth. The best we can expect is partly cloudy with sun breaks. Did you know that weather phrase actually originated here in the Pacific Northwest? Another little known fact. As of at least 2013, Bellingham had the distinction of being the city in the United States with the most cloudy days. We also buy more sunglasses than any other state in the Union, per capita, of course. My guess is this happens because we lose track of our sunglasses during our long breaks between sunshine. Years ago, when I was young and the Seattle PI was more than just an editorial page, I read a weekly column, Emmett Watson. Emmett Watson was the writer's name. He declared himself in favor of Lesser Seattle, encouraging his readers to complain about the rain in every correspondence, even going to the length of using an eyedropper to drip watermarks on a letter so the author could apologize for a leaky roof. I really loved his work. Weather aside, October brings with it my most favorite holiday, Halloween. I get a kick out of all the kids costumed up and gleefully gathering candy. It brings back fond childhood memories of trick-or-treating with my brother under the watchful eyes of my grandmother and parents. We used pillowcases back then to hold our loot. We lived on South Park Drive along Broadway Park, so our nighttime adventure consisted of knocking on the doors of every house surrounding the park, both sides. That doesn't seem like much now, but back in 1961, when I was 7 years old, it was quite the undertaking. As I grew older, I took over the task of giving out the candy. I would keep track of the numbers of kids that came by and tried every year to beat last year's record. Then came my turn to be the guardian, as my two kids carried on the tradition. Much of that part of Halloween has changed. Now it is more common to trick-or-treat in malls or in downtown areas. Many go to church or school-sponsored parties. Safety concerns is usually cited as the reason for the switch. Back in the day, it seemed being under the watchful eye of an adult or older sibling was enough. Not so today. It may have been that those were more innocent times. Or could it be that we have lost connection with those who live around us? Our sense of community has changed. It's fairly well agreed that we fear what we don't know or understand. Could that be what is causing the discomfort with taking the kids door to door in the neighborhood? Fear of the unknown? What would happen if we stepped out of our comfort zones and began to introduce ourselves to our neighbors again? I have just moved to a different part of town. I think I will take a playbook out of the past, dust it off, and during the next year, attempt to introduce myself to my neighbors. I'll let you know how it goes. Mom used to send over a loaf of homemade bread or casserole when she observed a new family move into the neighborhood. I might try that. I will probably use gift cards. One never knows what could be hiding in a casserole. In the Mix by Bridget Adams. First and importantly, I have to send my biggest, most champagne-filled congratulations to Betty and her partner Kendall on tying the knot. David and I couldn't be there, but we toasted the happy couple from afar. Now, on to your regularly scheduled article. It's October, and that means it's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Anyone who has known me for any length of time knows that this is an issue near and dear to my heart. However, in the time of #MeToo, I believe it's even more important than ever to take a close look at sexual assault, both as a part of domestic violence and as its own crime. For many people, #MeToo represented only straight, white, cis women. Now, given that the movement was originally started by a black woman more than a decade ago, these women being the only faces and stories being shared is even more ridiculous. But as you and I both know, the truth is often ridiculous. There are too many myths about the LGBTQ community around sexual assault and rape. First, women don't hurt each other, hurt other women, and men don't hurt other men. Being gay means you are welcome. Being gay means you welcome any man's touch, anytime. Being a woman means other women can touch you or talk to you whenever they choose. Being bi means you're ready and willing all the time. And there's no power dynamic between same-gendered people, so there can't be sexual assault or intimidation. Those are three of the myths. The list goes on, and I haven't even touched on the issues trans and non-binary people deal with. And yet, straight, white, cis women are front and center of the movement. Yes, there has been allegations against Kevin Spacey, Terry Crews, although straight himself has faced inordinate amounts of backlash for reporting sexual assault by another man. But we, and the straight cis community, seem to think these are anomalous. Think so? Check out these numbers from the Human Rights Commission and the Center for Disease Control. 44% of lesbians and 61% of bisexual women experience rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner, compared to 35% of heterosexual women. 26% of gay men and 37% of bisexual men experience rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner, compared to 29% of heterosexual men. 46% of bisexual women have been raped, compared to 17% of heterosexual women and 13% of lesbians. 22% of bisexual women have been raped by an intimate partner, compared to 9% of heterosexual women. 40% of gay men and 47% of bisexual men have experienced sexual violence other than rape, compared to 21% of heterosexual men. And according to the Human Rights Commission and the 2015 U.S. Transgender Survey, 47% of transgender people are sexually assaulted at some point in their lifetime. Among people of color, American Indian, 65%, multiracial, 59%, Middle Eastern, 58%, and Black, 53%. Respondents were most likely to have been sexually assaulted in their lifetime. Nearly half, 48% of bisexual women who are rape survivors experienced their first rape between the age of 11 and 17. In other words, not only does sexual assault occur within our community, it seems to occur even more often than in the straight community. But the problem isn't just the straight community's view of us. It's also with our view of us. We want to feel that having a safe community doesn't just mean being free from hetero standards, but it also means being able to say anything we want to anyone, being able to touch anyone we want anytime, steal a kiss or a feel, or even guide a minor into our world, and it's okay because we're safe. Yes, generally speaking, the LGBTQ community is more open with sex and consent. There are stigmas in the straight community that we have rejected, and this is part of what makes us so amazing, that we are free, safe, and open. It still doesn't mean consent isn't important. It still doesn't mean that abuse doesn't happen. It still doesn't exempt us. If someone comes to you with their own hashtag MeToo story, believe them. If you have a hashtag MeToo story, share it. Or give the Northwest Network a call. And if someone tells you to stop, respect it. Those numbers are real. Those numbers are heartbreaking. Let's be better than this. Until next month, take care of you and each other. In My Opinion, by Subdued Desire. Sometimes you need to look at the full picture. And here is a list of 39 things. You will be able to tell what it's about as you hear the list. He has pressured a foreign leader to interfere in the 2020 American presidential election. He urged a foreign country to intervene in the 2016 presidential election. He divulged classified information to foreign officials. He publicly undermined American intelligence agents while standing next to a hostile foreign autocrat. He hired a national security advisor who he knew at the time had secretly worked as a foreign lobbyist. He encourages foreign leaders to enrich him and his family by staying at his hotels. He genuflects to murderous dictators. He has alienated America's closest allies. He lied to the American people about his company's business dealings in Russia. He tells new lies virtually every week about the economy, voter fraud, even the weather. He spends hours on end watching television and days on end staying at resorts. He often declines to read briefing books or perform other basic functions of a president's job. He has aides, as well as members of his own party in Congress, who mock him behind his back as unfit for office. He has repeatedly denigrated a deceased U.S. senator who was a war hero. He insulted a Gold Star family the survivors of American troops killed in action. He described a former first lady not long after she died as nasty. He described white supremacists as some very fine people. He told four women of color, all citizens and members of Congress, to go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came. He made a joke about Pocahontas during a ceremony honoring Native American World War II veterans. He launched his political career by falsely claiming that the first black president was not really American. He launched his presidential campaign by describing Mexicans as rapists. He has described women variously as a dog, a pig, and horse face, as well as bleeding badly from a facelift and having, quote, blood coming out of her whatever. He has been accused of sexual assault or misconduct by multiple women. He enthusiastically campaigned for a Senate candidate who was accused of molesting multiple teenage girls. He waved around his arms while giving a speech to ridicule a physically disabled person. He has encouraged his supporters to commit violence against his political opponents. He has called for his opponents and critics to be investigated and jailed. He uses a phrase popular with dictators, quote, the enemy of the people, unquote, to describe journalists. He attempts to undermine any independent source of information that he does not like, including judges, scientists, journalists, elections officials, the FBI, the CIA, the Congressional Budget Office, and the National Weather Service. He has tried to harass the chairman of the Federal Reserve into lowering interest rates. He has said that a judge could not be objective because of his Mexican heritage. He obstructed justice by trying to influence an investigation into his presidential campaign. He violated federal law by directing his lawyer to pay $280,000 in hush money to cover up two apparent extramarital affairs. He made his fortune partly through wide-scale financial fraud. He has refused to release his tax returns. He falsely accused his predecessor of wiretapping him. He claimed that federal law enforcement agents and prosecutors regularly fabricated evidence, thereby damaging the credibility of criminal investigations across the country. He has ordered children to be physically separated from their parents. He has suggested that America is no different from or better than Vladimir Putin's Russia. He's the president of the United States, and he is a threat to virtually everything that the United States should stand for. Why is Trump still in office? By subdued desire, retired, not shy, nor ready to be put to pasture. Pray the Gay Away, a serious musical comedy coming to the Langan Theater, November 8th through the 24th, 2019. Tickets at lincolntheater.org or call 360-336-8955. And come see Pray the Gay Away, a serious musical comedy. Hello from Pray the Gay Away production team. Thanks to generous grants and donors, we have free tickets available for youth and student groups to see the world premiere of Pray the Gay Away, a full live stage musical production at the Lincoln Theater, Mount Vernon, Washington, on either Saturday, November 9th or Thursday, November 14th, for the 7:30 p.m. shows, presented by Theater Arts Guild. To take advantage of these free tickets for your group, please email ptgashow@gmail.com with the name of your group or class, number of tickets requested, desired date, and contact info. These tickets are available on a first-come, first-served basis, open to youth groups under age 21 and to student groups part of high school or college university programs, any age. PFLAG is thrilled to be a part of this timely and important theater production. The topics raised will hopefully generate discussion and a commitment to more understanding and acceptance of the LGBTQI community. Lyndon Jordan, Skagit PFLAG. You can look at the PTGA website, https://ptgashow.com. And that's information about Pray the Gay Away, a serious musical comedy. Its world debut is in Mount Vernon, Washington at the historic Lincoln Theater, November 8th through the 24th, 2019. Tickets available at lincolntheater.org or call 360-336-8955. Four Short Stories, A Bibliography of Queer Film by Lyle Pearson. Lyle Pearson is a queer film historian that has published in multiple publications and holds a B.A. from Pacific Lutheran College, 1959, and an M.A. from San Francisco State College, 1968. He has taught at Western Washington University in Bellingham. His main interest is Indian cinema. Story number one. So this is what terror, happiness, and contentment felt like. From the 1960s. I lived in San Francisco during the 1960s. Enough said, but here are some details. I first took a room in Berkeley when I had enrolled in one summer class at San Francisco State College. Every morning I would throw open my window to the Berkeley sunshine, throw on a light shirt, pants, and shoes, and bus across the Bay Bridge and the city to San Francisco State College near the bay, only to find that the weather had drastically changed. It wasn't terror exactly, but I wished I'd worn a sweater at least. It took me about a week of summer classes to realize that San Francisco was always several degrees cooler than Berkeley. In the fall, when this had been sorted out and I was living in the city itself, I enrolled in two classes at San Francisco State College: a seminar in theater, and beginning film. But I had a B.A. in speech from Pacific Lutheran College in Parkland at the time, as well as one quarter at Stanford. I found myself a nuisance to John Fell, the professor in the film class, because I had already read so much about film, and I dropped it, and I took a class in the English department on film criticism. I'd already had an excellent class at Stanford on film criticism, climaxing with my paper on King Kong as pastoral. According to the principles elucidated by William Epson in his Some Versions of Pastoral, written in 1935. Before long, I had also enrolled to make my first 16mm film about feeling trapped in San Francisco. But the little car that I had bought by then had failed, and I was unable to shoot all the locations I wanted. The pace of the film lagged, and it failed. This began my feelings of, well, unhappiness, although not of terror, in San Francisco. I remained there for a decade, working for the post office, finally achieving my master's in theater, before setting off on my travels that eventually led me to India. 2.1. Had never been quite so short of money, 1975. I have never been totally broke except twice, while traveling in Lebanon and Turkey. Here's the first instance, followed by the second. At a film festival in Tunisia, I had obtained the address and phone number of the Palestinian Liberation Front office in Beirut. I'd done so because at the film festival, the PLO said no one could show a film that criticized any Arab government. Beirut's PLO film office had made one on a breakaway movement in the United Arab Emirates, and I wanted to see it. So in Beirut on Friday, unfortunately the Muslim holy day, on my way to India, I phoned the PLO film office and had been given some vague directions, including, take a taxi. Now, in Arab countries, there are what are called lujas, or taxis, that make regular runs from one place to another. I unfortunately hailed one of them, already half full of Lebanese citizens and a driver who spoke no English. When I said, PLO film office, the driver misunderstood me, thinking I meant PLO office. And in Arabic, a block later ordered everyone else out of the louage. Going off his regular route, he drove straight to the PLO office. But it was Friday, the Muslim holy day, and we were informed by two guards outside, bearing machine guns, that the office was closed. No, I protested, having exited the louage. I just phoned the PLO film office 15 minutes ago. Angry, the macho driver pointed toward the back seat, ordering me to get back in. I thought, oh, we're headed to a police station where someone speaks English. There are no police stations in Turkey. This wasn't my first trip through this part of the world. But no, he drove me to the top of a hill overlooking a Palestinian refugee camp. Worried, I exited the taxi again, taking all of my money out of my wallet, all in one 500-pound Lebanese note worth over $100, and handed it to the driver, who by now was standing in front of me. Looking surprised, he said in Arabic something like, I can't change that, and threw the bill on the ground. At that moment, two Palestinian guards, also bearing machine guns, came into view over the crest of the hill. The driver yelled something else in Arabic, probably, he's a spy. I picked up the bill just before the guards grabbed me by the waist, the best way to disable a person, and searched my wallet. Shortly they led me partway down into the refugee camp to a tin shack and another guard. This one with a walkie-talkie as well as a machine gun. He kept asking me, they hurt you? They hurt you? And I kept assuring him by shaking my head no. Then my adventures in the Palestinian refugee camp began. I was interrogated twice, as they thought I was a spy, between waits with Palestinian teenagers who were more fascinated by me, but knew only as much English as I knew Arabic. By the end of the day, I had convinced the PLO officers that I wasn't a spy, but they still wanted to confiscate my passport, until I told them I was late for a film festival in New Delhi, and if they did that, I'd miss it altogether. After being placed in a jeep and asked to return and make a film for them, I was driven in to the PLO film office, where I saw the film that I wanted to see, and was soon put on my way again to India. Walking across the border from, this is story number three. Walking across the border from Syria to southern Turkey one late afternoon, that December, I found myself in a village whose name I've forgotten, a village divided by a chasm too large and deep for me to cross before nightfall. I looked at the chasm, again, all my money was in one bill, this time a Turkish lira, now worth a little less than $100. As I contemplated the distance, a shiny new white van pulled up alongside me with two young macho Turks in the front seat. I indicated that I wanted to cross to the bus station on the other side, and the driver indicated it would cost exactly 500 Turkish lira. I couldn't believe that he would charge me 500 lira for a 5-minute ride, so I reluctantly got into the back seat of the van, and we headed down and across the chasm to the other side. What else could I do in an unknown Turkish town in a December sunset? On the other side, near a small store that I saw had a wooden or coal stove heating it, I exited the van and stood by the driver's window. There was a pause, as I still couldn't believe that this little trip would cost me all I had. And what could I do if it did, but hoped the police would transport me to the American embassy in Ankara, more than 200 miles away. Again, I took the bill out of my wallet and handed it to the driver. A little surprised, he grabbed it, looked at me with reluctant pity, and gunned the gas, speeding off into the darkening shadows. I stood there a moment, totally broke, before remembering the little store with the glowing stove. I entered the store. Two Turks sitting by the stove looked up at me. I asked, "Do you speak English?" They shook their heads, "No." "Do you speak French?" Again, "No." I have never learned, four short stories continued. "Do you speak Arabic?" "Yes." I knew enough Arabic from living in North Africa to say, a man outside just took 500 lira from me. I also knew that the Quran states that if a follower of Muhammad, a Muslim, should be kind to strangers, if only to help convert them to Islam. Immediately, the Turk nearer the stove reached in his back pocket, took out his wallet, and handed me a 500 lira note. I said, "Thank you," and turned toward the door. I turned back for just a second to look at the two men, but didn't want to press my luck and exited. At the nearby bus station, I had a Turkish meal, bought a ticket north by northeast, and was on the road again. Soon after Christmas, I crossed the eastern border into Iran. I was on my way again, on my second trip to India. Story 4, Changing Times in Pakistan, 1977. I was told in 1977 that 5 copies of any Indian weekly and monthly could be bought legally across the border into Pakistan and sold for twice their original price at Pakistani newsstands. The vendors would in turn sell them for 10 times that price. So the next time I went to Pakistan, I stocked up. Exhibit A. Exhibit B tells what happened to my magazines at the Pakistani border. Since the Bhutto trial reached its height, particularly after the publication in India of papers smuggled out of his cell, if I am assassinated, 35 rupees, all Indian publications had been banned in Pakistan. Newspaper here refers to daily newspapers, clipped articles, and the last few months of the Cinema Weekly tabloid screen. While Youth Times is not listed in Exhibit A, it does have the honor of being also banned, Exhibit B. Later, my own article on Pakistan would appear in Youth Times. The customs officers had snuck away my only copy of India's imitation Playboy magazine, Debonair. It is not mentioned in list Exhibit A, and now is certainly in the excited hands of a customs inspector. And I was told by the assistant director of customs that even though the publications and my several 33 and a third revolution Indian film record albums were only deferred, not seized, yet I could never see the magazines again, only the records, and I could only hear them again if I went back to India in the next 2 weeks. However, I stayed in Pakistan, my second visit, for 6 months, obtaining a new Indian visa and comparing it to India. So even Hindi filmy singers like Kishore Kumar and Mohammed Rafi are now banned in Pakistan. Who knows what they might be singing? Agar Humara Degeneri, translated, if we are killed. And then he lists the exhibits of the things that were taken from him by the border guards. Filmfare, Stardust, Subarang, Biswin Sadi, Filmi Dunya, Astana, and Zidargi. Too scared to drive, but I bicycled across America. by Robert Ashworth. I have never learned to drive a car. In high school, I was pretty timid. My mom used to say I was afraid of my own shadow. She didn't drive either, so I had my mom as a role model. Clear to this day, I have feared piloting a multi-ton vehicle at high speeds through the landscape, with well over 30,000 Americans dying in car accidents each year. I also thought we were going to be running out of oil. My high school and college years were during the oil crisis of the 1970s. Ironically, this fear of one is one of the reasons I can still ride a bicycle today, past my 60th birthday. The slower pace of bicycling was something I felt I could handle. It has kept me healthy over the years. I've bicycled across the United States, which some people think is a brave act. But I keep telling folks that I'm afraid to drive. Bravery might be the wrong term. Patience seems to be more accurate. Patience when riding past miles and miles of farm fields. It does help to have a radio for entertainment. A radio versus cell phone if one needs to save cell phone battery life for other uses. It's best to just have a headphone in one ear so the other ear can hear traffic. The things I see and the people I meet along the way create a rich experience. Most folks rushed past these parts of life. As I was sharing photos of Eureka, California with a friend after one of my trips down the West Coast, she commented about Eureka. That's where we stopped at a Dairy Queen. Eureka by car goes past a lot faster. It reminds me of some Canadians I met when they were exploring downtown Bellingham for the first time. Upon leaving I-5, they said, "We didn't realize there was anything more to Bellingham than Bella's Fair Mall." I didn't just get up one day and decide to bike across the country. I got into it gradually. My first trips were across town, then out to the country just to see if I could do it. After quite some time, I thought I could bring camping supplies with me to try an overnight. Eventually, I was adding more miles and overnight strays until I could cross the state of Washington. It was like gradually dipping one's toes into water. Now that I'm getting older, I hear rumors that one's physical ability slows down with age. I'm sure this is true, but I often like to say that I haven't noticed it yet, since I've never brought a stopwatch with me. For me to bike up Seaholm Hill must be longer than it was in my college years, but it's still an enjoyable ride. I've never measured the time it takes. Needless to say, I'm not into racing or competitive sports. My 8th grade PE teacher was worried since I had no interest in sports. During baseball, I would go as far as into the outfield as I could get to be away from the action. I was afraid of the ball and I didn't really care about the score. He called me into his office to give me a pep talk. He was worried that I didn't have the spunk to get through life. Years later, that same teacher moved to Bellingham. I met his wife at a social occasion, and we talked about my 8th grade experience. I mentioned that I had biked across the USA since then. She relayed that information to him. He was glad to hear the news. When I talked to her, she also said that he had mellowed out quite a bit since his more macho days as an 8th grade PE instructor. I hear today's PE classes are not as competitive as they were in my schooling days. They do more things like aerobic exercise and dance. I often enjoy going to places like Rumors for dancing. It still feels good to dance due to being in shape from bicycling. Dancing is a form of exercise. I'm also glad that bars in the state of Washington are now smoke-free. Often one hears that people put off going to the gym because they need to work out. They say working out takes willpower, but they don't say that about dancing. When it's fun, like bicycling and dancing, it doesn't take as much willpower. Robert Ashworth. November's Astrology Page by Matt Keller. October 3rd, Jupiter. There was this guy in England who got a $135 speeding ticket and disputed the charge like no one could believe. When all was said and done, this elderly man had spent over $30,000 of his children's inheritance fighting the penalties of a ticky-tack infraction. If your birthday is June or March 8th, watch out for local federale. The lawman doesn't care about your needs when it comes to padding the precinct's bank account. Birthdays of March or September 10th can expect a helping hand from an unexpected source. Your lucky numbers? 10, 18, 0, 24, 29, 14, 5, 16, 20, and 13. October 5th. Saturn, Pluto. Every month I wait until the final deadline before writing my stuff for the Betty pages. I don't know why, but I can never find inspiration until the last minute, when I slam something together right at the last minute. That's why there's usually some spelling and grammar errors, along with whatever mistakes I make. What's odd is that even if I finish on time, there are still typos everywhere. Maybe I should have paid more attention in all those English classes I failed. Procrastination gets the best of everyone sometimes, and if your birthday is January, July, or May 11th, pay attention to how much you actually are producing per hour. Individuals born April 9th or September 13th should see a little pickup in their giddy-up, and their work efforts will show it. Your lucky numbers are 12, 14, 3, 26, 1, 18, 5, 20, 16, and 13. October 10th, Neptune. Last Halloween, I finally went and saw the Rocky Horror Picture Show at the Mount Baker Theater. I had a small idea of what to expect, but never had I imagined the amount of crowd interaction that goes along with the production. The live show that coincides with the screen show is hilarious and well choreographed, and I encourage everyone to see, because whether you're gay, straight, or somewhere in between, the hot ass prancing around on stage is worth the price of admission. I especially recommend attending if March 7th, September 5th, is your birthday. Maybe you'll be inspired to take part in a production if June 8th or December 8th is your birthday. Purchase tickets, but don't expect to use them. Something seemingly will likely distract your attention. Your lucky numbers are 17, 16, 10, 2, 4, 19, 14, 5, 20, and 12. October 14th, Uranus. I can't remember what science magazine I was reading when I learned that Uranus produces an electromagnetic field that can be detected some 90 million miles away. Have you ever wondered why there's 5,280 feet in a mile? That seems odd to me. Why are there 12 inches in a foot? And why is a foot called a foot? These are some of the things I think of at 3 a.m. when I can't sleep and the Sandman isn't coming anytime soon. If your birthday is April 25th or October 28th, catch a buzz and decipher the secret codes of the universe. You won't have to think about the secrets if July 28th or January 25th is your birthday. They will come to you when you least expect it. Your lucky numbers are 21, 5, 15, 7, 20, 14, 16, and 11. October 26th, Mars. I've been thinking about it for a while, and I finally started my own Wiccan wedding service project. I studied up on hand fasting ceremonies, and I'm taking all my construction, astrology, and other talents and putting something together for myself. It boggles my mind that I can work as hard as I do for someone else, but for my own project, I always struggle for motivation. I'm sure there are several people like me, and it's time for some certain individuals to take the bull by the horns and become more independently productive. Consider starting your own endeavor if October 7th, April 9th, or April 9th is your birthday. Your project might be coming to an end if July 5th or January 4th is your birthday. Make sure it doesn't blow up in your face. Your lucky numbers are 3, 14, 26, 22, 15, 4, 16, 20, and 10. October 29th, Mercury, Venus. I heard on the radio about some guy who divorced his wife and forgot one major thing. He never told her about it. He prepared all the necessary documents, forged her signature, and didn't inform anyone until all the paperwork had been processed and they were legally divorced. Now he's headed to jail and still married to his unwanted partner. If your birthday is November 19th or May 17th and you're dealing with separation problems, don't worry. Something else is coming your way that is much more problematic. The opposite is true for people born September 18th or January 17th. Now would be a great time to make business or marital arrangements. Your lucky numbers are 5, 26, 27, 16, 22, 15, 4, 20, and 10. October 31st, Jupiter. Jupiter is one of the easiest planets to see with the naked eye, and tonight it is a gorgeous sunset star, provided there aren't any clouds. The lunar spectacle will disappear by 9 p.m., so get out there early to get the best viewing spot. Birthdays of December 15th or June 13th are receptive to the cosmic philosophies, while birthday might feel this alignment on the physical level, be careful how much you drink, no matter when your birthday is, and have a wonderful and safe Halloween. Your lucky numbers are 7, 23, 27, 28, 17, 15, 4, 16, 20, and 1. Monthly Overview. All Hallows' Eve has always been one of my favorite holidays. The costumes, candy, and decorations all inspire my spirit and make the darkening days a little brighter. I can do without all the pumpkin spice flavors, and the rain gets annoying as well, but it's still my favorite celebration. Mercury and Venus follow the setting sun, along with Jupiter and Saturn setting shortly after that. They'll all be gone by midnight and set earlier and earlier as the season progresses. During the first few days of October, Mars might be visible as a morning star, but by the end of the month, it surely will be. There aren't any significant meteor showers or other celestial happenings for a while, but the International Space Station is always cool to see. And that's the astrology column for October by Matt Keller.